Hey gang, if you like comedy, check out my comedy special. It's on YouTube, free for the whole world. It's called Out to Lunch. Give it a goog, check it out, yuck it up. I also have a podcast called Tuesdays with Stories with me and my pal Joe List. Comes out every Tuesday. Check that out. And yeah, have fun. Go gay and praise Allah.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Oh, you know, a little hungover, a little gay. I got to get out there. I'm dying to see South Africa.
You, as soon as everything comes down, you are more than welcome to come through. Come through. We'll take you around. We'll show you places. We'll hang out. We'll have a good time.
Oh, it's a date. I'm going to hold you to that because I'm dying to see it.
Hand on my heart, man. Absolutely. Please come.
You know Will Sylvince?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He's my guy. He's always talking about how I got to go there.
Will loves South Africa. We love Will, too.
Oh, yeah. He's a cute, likable, lovable Haitian.
Who doesn't eat meat?
Yes. No meat, no sugar, no sex. And yet he still seems happy.
You know what, Mark? I'm not going to lie. I loved watching a clip of you on YouTube when you performed at the parking lot.
Oh, wow. Oh, thanks.
That clip gave me life. I've never seen such vulnerability in a man.
And yeah, it wasn't pretty.
And such, it was a humility of a losing man in a wrestling match.
Yes, yes. I got KO'd and I got hit with a folding chair, metaphorically. It was a nightmare. I mean, my ego through the floor, you know. You get a couple horn honks and a few headlights, and if you're doing really well, you get the wipers. But other than that, it was a nightmare.
What made it incredible for me is how you were present in the moment. You noticed everything that was happening around you and you commented, but you could see how it was affecting you, but you kept going, and that made me laugh so hard.
Well, you got to do your time, you know? I mean, that was the longest 12 minutes of my life, which that's what my ex said about me. But yeah, it was a nightmare. It was raining. I was getting dripped on. It was a parking lot. There's no laughter. It was nighttime. It was hell.
Who convinced you to do that parking lot gig?
Well, apparently it's pretty good normally, because normally it's not raining and people show up and, you know, it's like a fun kind of kitschy thing to do. So all my friends did it, like, yeah, go out there. You get a free meal. It's fun. And I got the rainy day.
Ah, man.
Yeah.
But it made for some good memories on YouTube.
Yeah. I'm glad I filmed it, because it was, that was a sad state of affairs. Thanks for good footage.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, Mark. Where did you grow up and how was your upbringing? Because Josh told me a little bit, and I know that Josh has a way of telling a story that can ruin it for me, because when I hear it from the real person, I'm like, Josh, you could have done so much better.
Yeah, Josh stinks. No, I grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana, born and raised in a weird house that was like a dilapidated mansion in a poor neighborhood. And yeah, it was a weird lifestyle. I went to public school and we got robbed a lot, and had a transvestite nanny. My parents were always with a lawyer, so they were always out doing stuff. And so we just had the house to roam free. I used to skateboard in the main parlor downstairs, and yeah, kooky times.
When does a kid discover his nanny's transvestite?
Well, it was a large black guy in a wig and high heels. So, you know, the leg hair, the bulge in the pants, all that stuff, the huge arms, you know. So you got it pretty quickly. But again, as a kid, you're like, oh, my nanny is wearing a dress. Yeah, well, it's New Orleans. Who gives a shit? And you move on. Things just become normal, you know.
So your parents never sat you down and said, we're going to leave you in the care of nanny Buff over here, and we'll see when we see you. You just discovered it by yourself.
Yeah, my parents, they're the most, you know, they're aloof, they're open-minded. They're like, we need a nanny. And somebody's like, try this person. They were like, great, he's hired. And he showed up with a purse and a big wig. And they said, whatever, just as long as you don't molest the children. He said, you got it. And that was that.
Do you remember catching him without his wig and a dress?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Looking like a regular dude, and you were like, aren't you mine?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was always lopsided. You know, he'd do a lot of cleaning. He was on his hands and knees cleaning the tub, so that wig was askew quite a bit. And, you know, huge thighs, huge legs. You know, I used to ride on his back and stuff. It was fun. Still turned on by it when I think back. But yeah, weird times. But yeah, it was just normal. I mean, he was a tough dude too. Like, I mean, I got my bike stolen and he got it back for me and stared these kids down and just took the bike and they were calling him all kinds of slurs and it was fine. And he got through it and taught me how to fist a cuff a little bit and how to wrestle and taught me how to like take a lady out, put the seat up and open the door for her and all that shit. So he knew his stuff. And knew makeup and heels and fashion and dancing and music. So he was a well-rounded tranny.
What was his name? Is he still alive?
No, he was killed in a sexual endeavor. He was fooling around with a guy in a van, and apparently the dong came out, and the guy flipped out and shot him. But,
no way.
Yeah, we gave him that van, too. It was like the family van, and we gave it to him. His name was Enos. Great guy. R.I.P. And yeah, my dad was like, we don't need this van anymore. You take it. You can put all your dresses in there. Because he would go on the road and do burlesque shows.
Yes.
So yeah, he got killed in the van by a you know, a guy who hated dicks.
Who hated surprise dicks, apparently.
Yeah. Surprise dicks are the worst dicks. I mean, dicks are bad, but nothing worse than a surprise dick.
You know, whenever I have a conversation with my friends from South Africa and we speak about how we were exposed to comedy, it's always weird when we hear it from your perspective because you guys had so much exposure to it.
Right.
You guys had sitcoms, you had your family, your fathers or grandfathers bought records that you guys listened to.
Yes.
Of Red Fox and Steve Martin and Pryor. We never had any of that. For us, it was weird because my generation of comics, we bumped into comedy by coincidence.
Really? So no sitcom, no nothing?
No, we always had a sitcom. So remember when we were watching Seinfeld, we never understood what Seinfeld did for a living. We knew he went and told jokes. But remember that when you watch Seinfeld doing stand-up on his show, he's the only stand-up on the show.
Yeah.
So if you've not been exposed to stand-up, in your head you're thinking, this guy goes out, he does his own show because he stands in front of people and he talks to them and he goes home. And the rest of the time he's just, you know, doing whatever he does. But the concept of there's a club where people go.
Right.
And you can stand right in front of them and you're not the only one. And then ultimately you do your own one-man show where you can talk as long as you want to audiences that have bought tickets just for you. And so you think of all these categories of stand-up. You think of the ensemble. You think of the one-man show. You think of the club scenario. You think of the tours. And you think of the arenas and the small college shows, as you guys call it. College, right? Shows as you guys call. We never had exposure to that. We were like the second real wave of stand-up comedy. So when we started getting exposed to YouTube a little bit, we saw people actually standing in front of a crowd doing stand-up.
Right.
And that time we're in our mid-20s going, what the fuck?
Wow. Because Johannesburg is such a major city. It's like a hub, a cultural hub. You know, so much comes out of there. You would think you'd have comedy clubs or at least some kind of comedy theater or stand-up night or something.
No, we started having that. So okay. there was always a white scene of stand-up, obviously in casinos. So, but to us on mainstream television for black people, we never got exposed to it. But it was only when YouTube started becoming a thing and we started going to these comedy rooms that started popping up, not as comedy clubs, but there was something else, you know, during the week, and then you would go and do stand-up. But when we first saw how in the US it's a real culture, especially in New York, we just lost our minds. We just knew that there was a nirvana somewhere where people can just go and say what they like to say.
Yeah, that's great, man. And I guess Trevor Noah is the big South African comic, right?
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. But there's going to be more and more. It's only going to be more from now.
Yeah. And you know, it's only when you know, when you go deeper into stand-up, do you realize there's so many styles of stand-up.
Right.
Right?
Definitely.
I never knew there were styles. And the first time I knew there was a style was there was deadpan and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, all that shit. I mean, that's what's so great about stand-up is it's so broad. There's so many, it's got a huge range. Like, who's more different in people than Maria Bamford and Cat Williams? And yet they both did the same job. How cool is that?
Yes, it's the only profession where you can do that apart from medicine, really, where you can specialize. You can call yourself doctors and specialize. But I always worry because a butcher wears the same outfit as a doctor does.
Yeah. And
save anyone's life. So
that's good. That's good observation. You should use that. Is that in the act? That's gold. I like that. That's a keeper. I also think it's interesting that a judge, this guy who's like, you know, up on a higher chair, you call him Your Honor. He's wearing a robe all day. This guy's wearing a robe to work.
Yes.
I always thought that was kind of weird. Like, this guy, I got to blow this guy. He's in a robe. I was wearing a robe earlier. I took it off to come here.
I took mine off to stand in front of a guy who's still keeping his on.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's the ultimate, you know, you're the king. You got to wear a robe at work. You figured out how to do that. That's why I'm kissing your ass.
When you first start getting exposed to stand up and going to clubs, how do you start knowing this is your style, whatever style that it is that you have? How do you go, this is my jam?
That's a good question. That took me years. It's one of those things where it's right under your nose, but you can't see it. I think it just takes repetition, just doing it over and over, listening to your sets. Like seeing who you are when times are tough, when the crowd is heckling you, when your back's against the wall, and the person that comes out at that moment, I think that's the real you. It's kind of that you concentrated. And once you figure that guy out and you can just turn that on instead of having it pulled out of you, then you really have your voice. Like Bill Burr is great at that. Bill Burr can just walk on stage and he's already in that angry Boston cunty Irish guy mode, you know?
Yes.
And Chris Rock, you see Chris Rock, we see him in New York, or we used to, but he would go up with a legal pad and have no charisma, no personality, no energy, and deliver the jokes. And then you see when the camera's on him, he's like, yeah, I'm Chris Rock, right? And he brings that whole mojo. And I think that's really who you are. That's your essence or your voice. And that took me forever.
I think you're right. I've never thought of it like that. Comics are willing to go where the average person is not willing to go. It's like we've forsaken our natural instinct to avoid death at all costs.
here, we walk into the fire.
Yes, we like pilots, and I think more like U-boat.
right. Firemen.
We know we're in a tube, and we know if someone drops a depth charge on us, we're done for, right? Unless we fire a torpedo at them first at the right angle.
Yes, yeah, it's similar to a tightrope walker. Like, you know you could fall at any moment, but you're like, fuck it, let me see if I can get to the other side.
Is there any other rush that beats stand-up comedy?
No, because you get the rush. Else? I mean, there's skydiving and there's all that shit, mountain climbing. But with mountain climbing, I still don't get to talk about the judge's robe, you know? So you get the rush and you get your point across, your point of view. So I think it's a perfect marriage of those two things.
Look like a guy who can handle a hater or two.
Well, yeah, I've handled it my whole life. But COVID is a great motivator for hate. Look, COVID has a million people trying to kill it, trying to bring it down, and it's going, fuck you, I'm global, baby. I'm a household name. Keep trying to kill me. I've been out here a year, and everybody knows my name. You guys talk about me nonstop. COVID's like the ultimate pop star.
I love how COVID humbled everyone and made us stay at home and learn how to make muffins and knit jerseys.
Yeah, exactly. We're all Zooming. Everybody's working from home. You know, I'm doing push-ups like a serial killer in my living room. COVID got us.
You know what? I don't understand about the COVID vaccine is when the scientists say and the pharmaceutical companies say the vaccine is 80%. It effective. Works 80% effective. I'm like, so what about the 20%?
I know. So it sucks.
Who's handling the 20%? You know how big a market that will be if you can just cover the 20%?
I know. But I'm a optimist. You know, like 80% is pretty good. I mean, aspirin kills probably 100,000 people a year. So you got to factor that in. Other shit kills people too. Cars and planes and anal and shit like that. So like, you gotta factor that in. 80% is pretty good. That's a B+.
But Mark, would you buy a phone that charges only up to 80%?
You got a point there. Well, here's your answer. We got to get a bunch of Asian kids on the vaccine. Make them work in a sweatshop just like the iPhone and make them figure it out. Hey, they built a hell of an iPhone, those little tiny Asian fingers. So let's get them on the vaccine.
I feel like whenever I think of the COVID-19 vaccine, I think COVID, because when COVID first started, it was just given the nickname coronavirus year 2019, right? So the COVID-19.
Oh, then, I didn't know that.
Yes, and then they said it's a different strain of flu, right? And then as a flu, as a sickness or a disease,
yeah,
has different symptoms, right?
Okay.
So flu is made up of everything else. So flu is almost like a fruit salad of bullshit that gives you a fever, that makes you sneeze. So that's like Captain Planet of sickness, but has been non-threatening, because the last time flu was super threatening was during the back in the day during the Spanish flu, right? So that's the flu that wiped up a lot of people. So from then onwards, flu like got a mild, timid reputation. Then there was flu's dirty cousin, tuberculosis, and but he was still rolling around and living his best life. And then there was emphysema, that he was just evil, and then he just killed the smokers. So when they said the strain of flu, which is COVID-19, is much more dangerous, I think it was just 20% that was existing, and the 80% was the rest of the symptoms. And then the rest of the symptoms sat down to give the 20% the bullshit way to show that it's not so strong. And then that's why COVID-19 vaccine works, is because the other symptoms were like, no, I'm not going to partake in this. Sneezing was like, I'm not coming. The headaches were like, I'm taking a day off. And then the COVID was just left by its own week as 20%. Because that's the only way you can explain that the most dangerous flu since the Spanish flu is only curable if you take it up to 80% cure, right?
Ah, wow, man, you've thought this out. This is good stuff. Well done, sir. Holy shit, you're blowing my mind here.
Yes. Yes.
Good stuff. I mean, I've just been jerking off to Fauci this whole time, and you're putting all these thoughts together and hypothesis and variables. I mean, this is brilliant. Great, great point. Great point. You blew my mind there.
Because if you think about it, Mark, death is a side effect of COVID.
Ooh, here. Good point.
Having been sentenced to drinking chicken soup was the side effect. That was the worst that could happen. You get the sniffles, you get the headache, you get the fever, you drink the chicken soup, matzo balls, and then you make it through, right? But COVID said you might not come out of it.
Yeah, good point. I mean, you got me there. I don't know where to go. I'm speechless. I'm hard. That was great.
We live to serve. Next on our agenda, Dr. Fauci.
So what's going on with the vaccine? Like, did Americans invent it, or did because it's made in Belgium? Mm-hmm. So what's going on there?
I think the vaccine right now is going to end up like beer. You know, everyone's going to like it, but everyone can claim that they made it first. So right now there's a Chinese vaccine that's being tested in the United Arab Emirates. But they're saying they're only doing that because they've got the number of cases in China under control. So I'm like, did you guys make it? No.
Ooh.
So there's the British are taking one, but I'm not sure where that comes from.
Okay.
And the Americans, are you guys taking it? Did you guys make any of your own?
Well, we got Pfizer, so that's an American company. So we've been claiming it. Yeah.
Isn't Pfizer a German name for an American company?
Ooh, it is, but we got Anheuser-Busch. That's also German. We got a lot of German shit over here. Nazis, you name it. We got it all. But yeah, that's a good point with the beer. I like that. Also, wouldn't it be funny if all the vaccines had the personality of the country? You know, like the British vaccine is a little cunty and dry. The Chinese vaccine, it's poorly made, you know, and you want it again 2 hours later. That's a bad hacky Chinese food joke. But yeah, you get it. The German one is, you know, hates Jews or doesn't work on Jews, you know, the whole thing. Oh boy, we're having too much fun.
I think the next epidemic is gonna be the 20% that the vaccine doesn't catch. I can bet you that. I feel like no one can make something that works 100% and let it just happen. I feel like if 100% vaccine of everything was working, we wouldn't have tuberculosis.
Right.
AIDS would have been long gone.
Yep.
Cancer would be cured with one treatment.
Yep. Well, we
You know,
beat polio, didn't we? That's 100%, I think.
yes, but I think polio became non-fashionable. I think as soon as fascism and racism in Europe ended, there was no reason for someone to wear a metal brace on their knee. So it was like, no, we have to, polio has to go. It's making us look bad over here, you know? So it
By the way, polio vaccine took 14 years to perfect, which is also
14.
terrifying. Yeah, fun fact.
14.
14 years. Give it a goog there, Jamie. It took 14 years, which is so impressive now looking back at our vaccine, which took about, 8 months.
Why
And it
do
ain't perfect.
you think we were, I say we as a human race, because I'm taking responsibility for finding the cure as well. Why do you think we found the cure or the vaccine for COVID faster than we found one for AIDS, for cancer, and for tuberculosis? Why were we so quick on this one?
That's a
Whose
great
grandmother
question.
died?
Yeah. AIDS was like a huge epidemic. It swept over in the 80s and it killed a lot of people. Like back in the day, if you got AIDS, it was like a death sentence. Magic Johnson is like one of the few exceptions. But like, yeah, but COVID, Trump got COVID, Giuliani got COVID, Tom Hanks, Idris Elba, like, and they're all fine. So I don't know. That's a good point. You'd think we'd cure AIDS before we cure COVID, because AIDS is a killer.
Yes, but like I've had this conversation before. I said, don't you think scientists use a moral compass to put attention and effort into curing anything? Because if you think about AIDS, AIDS has always been a moral disease. People always
Right.
assume that there was only one way of getting AIDS. We know that that's not the truth,
Right. Could be
right?
a needle, could be sexual. There's all kinds of ways.
Yes, but this one, when we said even your grandma can get it, someone jumped straight to it.
And I mean, I don't know about South Africa, but America, it's all about that green, baby. So the economy is shut down and they don't like that. So they go, we got to fix this. Sure, a bunch of homos are getting killed with the AIDS. They can deal with that. They're fucking each other in the ass. But not us. We need to open up this fucking shoe store.
Yes.
So America's all about the dollar, and it's sad because the poor gay community got their ass kicked.
Literally.
Yeah.
What's the type of stuff that you find yourself now watching on television where you're like, I would never watch this under normal circumstances?
Well, my girlfriend watches all that trash reality TV, 90 Day Fiance, Bachelorette, Locked Up Abroad, whatever the fuck it is. And I hate all that shit, but I find myself looking up at my phone like, wow, what a skank. How about that, huh? She cheated on her. Oh, look at that, So it sucks you in because it's such trash. But I watch a lot of documentaries, a lot of YouTube, big YouTube guy, Wormhole. Oh, there's an elk getting killed by a lion. Oh, let's check out this comedy set. Oh, look at that BMW. Oh, look at this fist fight. Just boom, boom, boom all day.
I found myself in one of those, and then I started by watching a bunch of hillbillies that live in Miami, in the swamps in
Yep.
Miami, that were shooting hogs at night. And every time they would shoot a hog, they would say, "But y'all folks need to understand that we need to do this because they destroyed the vegetation around here." And they would explain after they shot the thing with a night scope. And then I went to this wormhole and I found myself watching the bearded butchers, these bunch of these two guys who work in a butchery family shop. And then they were showing me how to derive the best cuts of meat from this cow. And then I went deeper, and then they showed me how to get the from a sheep, and then how to remove the sawdust with that little thing. Little, I went in, man. 6 hours went by, then
I started,
yes, then they showed me how to gut an elk and how to get the best parts of an elk, and you know, to get the rib eye out of it and to get the fillet out of it. And then I started going deeper, and I found this Canadian guy who decided to live outside in the wilderness by himself and build a cabin. Have you seen that guy?
I have seen that guy. That guy's amazing. I have. Yeah, that guy. I love all that shit. All that, like, wilderness, like, build a hut. All you got is a stick and a rock. And, you know, there's these unbelievable, I don't know if they're Asian or Filipino, whatever they are, but they'll dig a hole with their hands and make a pool out of it. And it's beautiful. They got this chisel and they make all these designs and they put a candle up and then they put the leaves down for the floor. It's unbelievable. I love that shit.
Have you ever watched any of those shows and someone building a cabin and an hour later you go into your bedroom, you're like, I was so fucking lazy, I didn't even make my own bed. This guy.
Totally. It's depressing. This kid's making six cents a year. He's eating almonds and you know, berries off a tree. And I got Grubhub and Seamless and a pizza coming. Yeah, I can't even get my girlfriend off. It's a nightmare. Yeah, they really rub it in, those little Filipino men. And they're shirtless. They got no shoes on. They got a little pair of pink shorts. And they're killing it.
And I love the way they squat. They squat.
Yes. Squat exactly. If I don't have a perfect Barca lounger with back support, I'm like, these guys are squatting barefoot on a rock in the heat. I'm trying to put together an IKEA with instructions and tools, and I can't do it. This guy's building a castle out of mud.
Every time I watch those DIY shows outside in the wilderness, I'm like, we've been sold such a dream, because now every single one of them have built a chair but have never made a couch. So I'm like, is the couch the reason why modern humanity has done nothing in life? The invention, where did we get to a point where we thought this thing here should be more comfy, much more bigger, lean far back? And then nothing got done. It's almost like civilization stopped when the couch started to exist. Because whenever I look at the wilderness in the cabin, I've never seen a couch. It's a chair.
Great observation. Yeah. Right?
And a bed. Yeah.
You're right. No couch. And then the ultimate fuck you is the couch that turns into a bed. You know what I'm saying? It's like, not only do I have this fluffy, comfortable, cushiony, big chair, but you know what? I think I'd rather lay down. Let's double down on the laziness. That's a great point. There's no couch in the wilderness.
There's no couch in the shit gets done. If you look at all pirate ships, there's no couch in there. It's everywhere where the couch ever existed, nothing gets done. Like when I see the couch, I saw a couch in the White House, and I was like, that's why shit never gets done. why is there a couch in here? But I think the upright sitting position makes you think better.
Uh-huh.
The toilet.
Uh-huh. Good point. Even a throne.
Yeah.
A throne is a king's, you know, king's got to sit there. It's a big chair, but there's no cushion. It's just a big chair. Yes. I mean, maybe it's a little padded or something, but
yes.
You're right. He's sitting upright and he's looking at the court jester, or he's going to cut somebody's head off or knighting somebody. You're right. There's no couch. This is a great point. You're blowing my mind, Eugene. These are good observations. There's some good comedy over there. I take it all back. I'm just kidding.
But you know, back to my guy in the wilderness. We must just get his name, Josh. You must get us his name and put a clip of him up there. When he started building a sauna for me.
Yes.
I was like, you don't deserve to be out in the wilderness anymore. Now you're trying to turn this into a spa. It's not gonna work for me. Like
right. But in his defense, he carried all that water in a fucking bowl from the river to the sauna. I mean, just that alone would take me 6 months. And I would go buy a hose and get one on Amazon, have it delivered to me. I mean, let me just say one more thing about the couch. At my old job, I used to work at a day job in an office building, and I went to the women's bathroom on accident one time, and they had a couch in there. No. And I remember thinking, this sums up men and women, the difference Perfectly. Women are all about comfort. They want to sit down. They need a time to reflect. They got a fucking couch in the bathroom. No man would ever have a couch in the bathroom.
Not a chance, Mark. Because if you think about it, most relationships have evolved because of the couch. It's when you're sitting on the couch, she lays on her chest, does she ask you, where are we going with this? You've never had this conversation sitting in a stool or in a subway. It's always when you're at the most comfortable.
Right.
That you get asked the toughest of questions.
Yes, because she knows she waits till you get comfortable, you relax, and then she pounces. It's like an animal. You know, hawks do it. They wait till the mouse is like, you know, gnawing on his little nuts or whatever he's got, then comes in and snags him. That's what the ladies do with the relationship. Pretty genius. The women there, they're predators.
Whenever you feel the snag coming, when you feel like the predator is hovering over you, the eagle is about to pick you up and you're the fish just going upstream, how do you react to it? Do you see it coming? I just think I've developed the sixth sense for it. I see
when women
are pouting their lips and they're hovering, it's like I see the hawk trying to zero in on me, and then I do the most obnoxious shit you can ever think of. I initiate asshole mode. I say stupid things like, I don't know why people get married. I don't know why people hold hands.
Right.
I say stupid things like that make her go, why would you say that?
Right.
And then I know that I've taken her off the game completely, right? But once you get caught up in 90 Day Fiance and men don't see it.
Totally. That's a good move. You're more mature than me. That's a smarter tactic. I just start farting. You know, if she's like, look, what are we? I'm like, oh, that was Chipotle or that was a burrito, you know. That's what we are. We are a fucking fart in the wind. We're on Earth for one little blip. Let's relax and watch the TV show. Stop asking me what we are. You know. I got into it the other night. She was like, what do you want out of this relationship? And I said, less questions. And she was like, are you serious? I was like, there's another one. It's true. You just want to sit there. Brutal. Ladies were joking. Little humor, little relationship humor.
You know, the oddest one is like the weirdest thing. We should actually write a book of the things that guys wish they could say when they ask the question. like whenever a woman says, am I just your fuck buddy? You're like, you're not my buddy, but.
Yeah, slow down on the buddy. Right. Some guy used to have this great joke. It's not my joke, but he was like, he's like, this woman's like, you date rape me. And he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We weren't dating. I was like, that's a great joke. He's like, that wasn't a date. That's not my joke.
Oh, man. You know, I'm not going to lie. There's a few things that I look at and I do them because I can afford not to do them. For example, flying commercial. I do it because I can't afford not to do it. There's nothing about it that's appealing to me. But Mark, I'm not going to lie. The first time I flew private, oh my God. Oh,
unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's like the first time you take the condom off. You know, you're like, why have I been not doing this? It's incredible. The flight's at 5:30. You get to the airstrip at 5:25.
Yes.
It's beautiful. You can walk around. You got a cocktail. You're eating sandwiches. You're taking shits. You're watching TV. I don't want the flight to end. It's a whole different ball game up there.
I look at people who've never flown private, and I'm like, you wouldn't understand.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, you wouldn't understand, and you try and explain. You're like. Those stairs, those 6-7 stairs that you just have to walk up after the car just dropped you by the plush red carpet.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And then, and when you're up there, you realize, oh, the plane is just a vehicle, like a car. Like before, you're like, oh, it's this annoying thing, security, you know, find your gate, wait in line, zone 1, zone 2. But then you're like, oh, wait, the plane? Yeah, take off your fucking shoes, your belt, and then you realize, oh, the plane's just a fucking vehicle. But we've ruined it with all the security.
Yes, and when you get in there and the snacks are already there, is it not a mind fuck to see snacks before the thing starts moving?
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. I love it. This is a basket full of Twizzlers and cookies and Snickers bars. Ah, it's a dream.
And you know you're a private jet novice when you open the bottle of Fiji water and a Coke at the same time.
right. That's the height of luxury right there. Oh yeah. You can get up, you can walk around, you can look out the window. It's just, you can go up to the cockpit and go, "Hey, what's shaking, fellas?" It's great. They're cracking a beer, everybody's passing a joint. Good times.
A segment on our podcast where it's the craziest story that has ever happened to you. You know those moments where you're like, I wouldn't make it up even if I tried. You know, when the story is so ridiculous. I feel like you have a lot of those.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, I lost my virginity to a prostitute on the New Year's Eve of the millennium. I'm talking
Y2K. Y2K.
Yeah. And this woman, I guess there was a buzz in the air. You know, the world is ending, all that shit. And this woman was in New Orleans, flashing everybody. That's what you do in New Orleans. And I saw her and I said, "Oh, yeah, you look good," or whatever the hell. She came down. We chatted, and I was 16 years old. She was probably 50. I ended up going back to her hotel room, sleeping with her. The whole thing was unbelievable. It was insane. I couldn't believe it was happening while it was happening. It felt like it was in a movie. And then I just left and went home. That was it.
Did anyone ever believe you when you told them that story?
I had two friends with me who waited in the other room. Thank God. I got witnesses.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Mark.
Hey, thank you, guys.